Ron, we will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:47. Fight the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall there. Attendance by observation: Jurgens Hill, Bauman, Darn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The consent agenda: approve minutes of the meeting held March 4th, 2015. The general agenda: approve all claims through March 18, 2015 in the amount of $348,756.96. Accept claim number 15030123 to Beatrice Lawn Care and 15030215 to Johnny's Welding, which will be voted on separately under regular agenda. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling check number 15020203 to Gage County Medical Clinic in the amount of $226. Approve register of deeds fee report for the month of February 2015. Need a motion to approve consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Tiemann. Vote. 7-0. Comments from the public. And I believe Lisa would like to talk about the races this weekend.
I just wanted to share with you a little bit of our racing stats over the weekend, because I think it's fair for you to hear it from the Gage County Ag Society first, because we're pretty excited about this last weekend's results. We had 273 cars participate for that three-day event. Out of that, nine of those were from, or excuse me, that represented nine states. And we brought in also two Providences from Canada. So the hotels were full, also in the community. We brought in about 6,500 people through the pit and through the grandstand for the weekend's events. But we are on our third year of doing a pay-per-view where people can actually buy the races. We film them right on site. So this is the statistics I want you to really hear, because everybody that the comments that came back were so positive from that. 38 states viewed the races. So they bought that program over a three-day period of time. And out of those 38 states, we also represented, in those stats, were Mexico, Australia, Canada, Nova Scotia, and Japan. So, but more importantly, you wonder how, you know, that takes away from your ticket sales. And we've tried to research that pretty hard, and we found that over 98% of those people that purchased that were at least an hour and a half driving time away. So we feel that those people are still coming that are in Nebraska that want to come. It just gives another avenue, you know, to sell our community and to sell our racetrack and the investment that the county has made into that racetrack. So all the comments from the drivers and the public were so positive. They're very appreciative. They think we have an outstanding facility. But most importantly, they were very, very complimentary to our community and the people behind it. So, but I wanted to share that with you.
That pay-per-view, was that while the races were going? That was live, or was
that was live
delayed?
Streaming. Live streaming is live what streaming. We did. That's our third attempt with doing that. So our statistics keep growing with that. It's a new avenue to sell and promote. And so keep in mind that our race is one of the first races here in the northern region that have the opportunity, the racers can race on dirt, and that's what they're all after. So chances are they won't be back until next spring. They may attend our fall, but they really want to race on dirt. And obviously we have to thank Mother Nature, too, because this is what it was all about. We all ended up with sunburns and so forth, but it was well worth it. So.
Well, Lisa, I'd like to compliment the Fair Board also. I mean, they do an excellent job at putting this on. It's a lot of work, I know, but they do an excellent job with it. So
we will convey that. So.
I heard big compliments about your fellows who take care of the track.
Good.
And what a wonderful job they have done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, if you went out on the track the first night, kind of dusty there, but that was done in purpose. A lot of those drivers like to set their suspension on their cars front and back end, and so we don't water a whole lot until they get the suspension and their brakes all worked with. And then by day two, there's enough rubber laid down that, you know, they can run pretty hard. So, but
thank you. It's yep. Big for the city of Beatrice and Gage County.
We
thank
agree.
You.
So.
What a great event. Next up, approve or disapprove claim number 150-30123 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $748.50.
I move to approve. Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Byers. This is on separate because of why?
Zurich's.
Separate because we have ownership of that company sitting on the board.
Good deal. Vote. 6-4 with team abstaining. Approve or disapprove claim number 150-30215 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $208.76.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Tiemann. Questions? Vote. 6 in favor with Jurgens abstaining. 9:15 we've got. Some other things. Committee reports. Building and grounds.
Dave Jones, we've had some stuff going on, and Dave will give us a report relative to the way we met with our prospective person who's going to be doing the outside of our courthouse eventually, but we're moving forward.
Yes,
Dave?
Good morning. Thank you. I did invite Greg Dennis to come down, and he talked to the committee about the stone repair. That this is the same person that did the southeast corner earlier, and using the Jean material to repair any damaged stone. And when we had him come down, he gave a report on, took some nice pictures and stuff of what's going on with our building. The building itself is in very good shape. But over the years, it does need repointed, which is a routine maintenance item. So that was one thing he brought up. But also, years ago, they used to think it was better to waterproof limestone, and now they're saying it's better to just let it breathe. And what is happening, if you throw water on this limestone, it will just beat up and roll right off, and it should absorb into it. And what it's doing is, with the freezing, thawing cycle, it's popping off. Not on the rock face, but mainly on the smooth surface of the walls, it will pop off pieces like this. And so what he's recommending is to wash the entire courthouse with a solution that would remove that silicone-based sealer on there, and then repairing damaged stones by grinding. They have to grind it out and then replace it with that Jean material. And that Jean has been time-tested. It's about been around 40 years. They've used it a lot in back east and stuff. So I think it's a real good product to use. It's a breathable product. And so mainly to correct the problems would be the washing and repairing. And like I say, otherwise, it's mainly in just certain areas. It's up higher where we're seeing the damage at. And what other counties have done, the county that Ord is in, I can't remember what county that is, they have hired him to do it, and he just does X amount of work over time, and they've had him, I think he said, 7 years. He comes back and just, you know, tackles a portion of it.
I'll just interrupt for a minute, but you all have a book that we've given you that shows all of these things that Dave is pointing out to you as far as the mortar is concerned, what's happening and what needs to be done. Some comments after that on what we need to do.
Right.
Please forgive me for interrupting,
that's
but
like,
this
no.
is a good piece.
That is. It's really interesting when he came down and talked about the mortar that you have to use to make sure that it's softer than the limestone, because as big as this building is, you don't really see any movement, but the blocks do move, and it chips off the edges of the block when the mortar is harder than the limestone itself. So he's recommending to you grind it out 3/4 of an inch and use a hydraulic-based limestone mortar repair on there. And like I say, that the repointing is actually more or less just a general routine maintenance. We haven't had this repointed in a long time. So
So we'll be moving forward on a regular basis. He'll be bringing us more information and starting to get into some estimates as far as cost, and we'll continue to move forward with this.
But I believe he said he's looking at up to like 7 years or something. If he did the whole courthouse this
right.
way, it would be certain areas, certain segments, and it would do it over a period of time. We'd just as soon do it in the fall.
Right, yeah.
When it works the best.
If we can pick the dates, yeah. When he did the southeast part, the reason I like to see him do it in the fall time, the weather's cooler. When they use that yawn patch, you actually have to mist it. If it's really hot, you mist it while it's drying, and this way they were able to just do it without the worrying about it drying out too quick.
We could be looking at some major expenditures here. I think he kind of threw out some $500,000 to $1 million
right.
as far as how much it's going to cost us, but we'll get closer to that
right.
as we go along.
And we did spend $13,000 last year with him, I believe, $13,000 we did spend
with him. Yeah, $13,000, and then we had an additional little bit of work on the south side, too. But.
So he did, but it... one of the main issues is that water's gotten in behind there, then it's sealed and can't come out, and then we're having some issues in behind where that water's not allowed to come back out. And this product, what he's using, the water's...
Would be able to breathe, yeah.
It'd be able to breathe, and the water would be able to come back out, because basically what that sealer did was if water got behind it, it also sealed it in. It not only sealed it from the outside coming in, if it ever got in there, and because of the cracks
right.
and stuff.
And it'll come off in a big
yeah.
piece. It'll be like this. And what he pointed out also, sometimes there's just a small little hole, and when you tap on it, you can tell it's hollow, so then they you know, just tap on it, and it'll break off the big piece, and then that's when they have to grind it down and replace that whole section with the yawn material.
What's the coloration look like? I was trying to look on these pictures to see if there's anything...
It is. He has an exact match to this, but when he did apply it, because this stone is waterproof and the yawn is absorbing moisture, there is a color difference in it. And that's what I was really concerned about at the beginning, is if we have a lot of patches, we don't want it to look polka dotted. And he is working. There is a top coat that they can put on this to blend it in better also. But he's been really good about working with trying to get an exact match. And if I had the sample here, I didn't bring it. It is exactly the same color as this, as long as moisture doesn't change the color. And that's where this washing the building would make it all look the same also. So, yeah, if I threw water on this, it would just completely run off of this side. The inside, it would be a lot darker.
So if the whole building gets washed, that'll probably stop the damage then?
It would prevent a lot of the spalling that's going on, yes.
It will slow it down.
Except for the stuff that's already damaged.
Well, until we get the cracks back right and the patching all done.
Right.
We haven't really stopped it. Yeah. Because we've had some effect of over the years of what's happened, and they've got to repair those, and then that will really... stop the water issues that we're having and stuff, because I think you said even somewhere in one of the courtrooms or something there's been some water issues.
There was water, and that was a joint failure. There was actually water that came all the way through when they were repairing that. He stuck his trowel in there, and I was surprised that once water finds a path in, it went in and it actually stained just one little piece of the wainscoting in the district courtroom. So that showed that water was getting into the building. So, and I looked before, I think it was in the 1980s was the last time they did any tuck pointing, or I don't know if it's been repointed in a long time, so I think we're due for some repair work on this.
But he's going to be back, Greg is, to visit and give some cost estimates of what certain areas need.
Right.
To start probably on the east side somewhere first.
Right. He had recommended doing the upper level first, starting on the east and just going around. And one other thing he did bring up would be on the chimneys. There's a lot of caulking on the chimneys, which that's not good. He would grind that out and repoint all those also. It sounds bad, but when you look at the building, there's certain areas that are in bad shape, but you can go a long ways, and there's other areas where there's no damage at all. So,
yeah. The building's not falling apart.
No, it's just a big building, so it does take a lot of time to cover the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to talk blue, too?
Well, yeah, I've been working with JT. We changed out some bulbs, and we did put a lens on there. JT's been really involved with trying to get this really nice, bright, brilliant blue on it. And we did try a lens that didn't appear to be all that blue, but he's still working on it. He's building some frames right now, and we're going to try it again and see. I know they've done it on other limestone buildings, and like at the Capitol, they have a lot larger wattage of bulb that shines out. Ours are 400 watt, and it just seems like the stone absorbs so much of the color that it makes it look just kind of dark and not blue.
We're more black and blue than
yeah.
the Capitol.
But JT is he's plugging away. He's really trying hard to make this really show up blue. So.
I think I got confidence in JT.
Yes.
He'll get her done.
Yes.
Just taking some work.
Yes.
We will get the water fountain fixed out here in the main hallway.
Yes. Yes.
I just want the sheriff to check out the stone weapon that he brought in today. That's kind of a...
Shank.
Shank. Yes. I like the over there, too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Equalization.
Nothing new.
Finance.
Couple of different things. One of them we had a conversation about was the copiers. Several departments, I believe five, are looking at some update. Four departments are looking at needing to upgrade the copiers. We didn't have any of that in the budget this year. Several years ago, we did a major desk and thing purchases out of inheritance fund, I think of around $80,000 or so, maybe a little bit more. So I think we were talking about getting some informal quotes. There appears to be one particular model that the group seems to like more often than not, and I guess then it's just a matter of deciding if they can wait until the budget year to put it in or if they need it sooner than later, and it sounds like they might need them sooner than later. So I would throw out for consideration using a miscellaneous general fund and not out of inheritance. We can still designate or transfer funds. Miscellaneous General has $214,000 left in it, and we specifically budget that for things that come up during the year that are just kind of unexpected. So just think about that. There's not an imminent purchase, but probably in the next month or so there might be, unless sooner. And I think Patty's office is
one. We have one office that might need it almost immediately. But
as much stuff as we try to do electronically, we still produce a lot of copies, apparently, in county government. And so some of these copiers are, Gus, how old is yours?
I think 4 years.
4 years old, and Patty's might be.
Patty's.
She bought a refurbished.
She bought a refurbished.
Trying to save money before. So
2007.
We try to get by pretty inexpensive, but we're probably at a point. And I think some of the, anywhere from around $4,500 to around $8,000 per copier. So it might be looking around $30,000. Just kind of chew on that a little bit. Something might be coming forward. But that's really it for finance. But I'd like to visit. Well, I guess we have it down here about Engage. Never mind. I'll talk about it later. Comparing the two, yeah. Roger's asking about leasing the copiers versus purchasing, and we're trying to compare the two, what might be a better deal or not. So we have looked at that as well.
Human resource?
Nothing.
Nothing. Law enforcement?
Start out, I don't know, Tim had a storm spotter meeting last night. I guess I'd like to have Tim give us an update as to how that went last night, and I guess we'll start from there.
I was going to ask to come up and speak for that. We had 40 people, and actually 42 with John and me, or John and I, and it was a pretty decent turnout, I guess, compared to what I asked with John. That was kind of an average of the people at show. I don't have the exact count of fire department and rescue, and there was a mixture of people. There was, with fire and some of the, and John's dispatch was there. So there was, I would say, about 20 public was there as well as some kids. So that was kind of nice. They got to see some neat material that the National Weather Service provides. Some new video with what happened in Pilger. Some really outstanding video, pretty scary video. But it's a good it's good access for them to see how dangerous those storms can be, and actually helps them understand that, you know, you see all these videos and all these pictures of everything, if everybody is so close to them, but you got to realize how dangerous that situation you are in at that point. It was just the very start of a tornado, and these people were driving right underneath that. I don't know if they were taking pictures of their moon roof or sun roof or whatever it was, but it was something else. So that's one of the big points to having that, as well as helping some of the local spotters with their fire departments, whatever, to understand what the National Weather Service is looking for reports, like from rain to hail to wind, and, you know, obviously tornadoes. Kind of gives them the pointers of what they're really looking for. As well, what John brought, he brought the rapid tag system that we have in our area, that the county owns, to show.
Identify who John is.
Oh, John McKee with, he's the Jefferson County Emergency Manager. Brought that rapid tag system, and what we use that for, if you don't know, it's actually just a prints a color tag with your name and basically just kind of just a regular ID. It doesn't have any picture on it like that, just information on it. And each one of them, we've kind of set up a color code of responsibilities of, you know, from law to volunteers to emergency management, to press, to certain areas where we can kind of get a quick ID of people and their kind of neon colors to where we can actually see them and direct them to where they go. But they got first taste of how that's actually going to work in case if there was ever a disaster, and we actually had to use that to where we had to kind of track people. One helps with record keeping. Another, it helps with, you know, getting people where they're to be and actually making sure we get everybody out of an area after the work time is over or whatever, so it keeps track of them, so, you know, we're not missing anybody. So and it's more of a direction control, so it's kind of nice to where they see it. It's kind of a slow process at the start and actually at the end, because you have to, you know, as you bring everybody in individually, you can only take everybody out individually. You can't just mass swipe, and that's one reason why it's for safety. So you don't just mass swipe everybody and you have 10, 15 people still working on site. Like in a fire, for instance, you don't want them out there by themselves, no backup type deal. So,
I don't think we want to forget, it hasn't been that many years since we had a storm move right through the center of Beatrice, and it can happen anywhere. And you look at Pilger and you look at some of these other places and around the country, and we're pretty blessed, but it can happen any day.
Yeah, we had some local emergency managers from this region that went up to Pilger to help assist, and that was some good knowledge that they learned from that to help our area as well. So that's some good handy knowledge. And that's one of the things they learned with the rapid tag, and one of the things that we made steps to have more of a color-coded ID system, to where it's very quick, you know, even for also like for security issues as well, you know where people are to be with just that card.
I think you made a good point last night in that you can't always see it on a radar and you can't always see it with some machine, but people looking up into the sky and having the eyes that can visualize some of these things is so important in having spotters.
Yeah, there's a lot of misleading clouds that, you know, that look like funnel clouds or look like tornadoes or aren't tornadoes, and certain actions between, you know, winds that can produce from those, can be produced from those storms that can cause tornado type winds that can cause tornado type damage that aren't tornadoes. Then, you know, one of the things that Brian Smith, which was the presenter for the National Weather Service out of Omaha, he talked about those downforce type winds, and he also talked about a tornado is not classified a tornado until it actually you're seeing the dust cloud from the ground after seeing the funnel cloud. So they don't want to classify it that until then, because then, you know, there's not really a a touchdown. So it's, you know, it goes through all kinds of other, you know, insurance type stuff with claims. And one of the things that, you know, you hear, and he talked about with spotters, you know, you hear on the videos or whatever that the spotters are classified as an F5. Well, and he also reiterated how those are classified as the actual damage that's done on the ground. It's not by the size of the tornado. It's not. It's all damage. And each building reacts different to certain certain tornadoes, and that's how they classify them, not by the size. You know.
There's a question about our process of spotters. We're previous. Mark had just had a handful of people that would spot in place. And we had discouraged over a period of years calling out fire departments, and because they become then an agent of the county if they're out there responding, and then we become liable from an insurance standpoint. So we had stopped that. Mm-hmm. Is that practice still in place that we're not calling fire departments out there, yeah, specific people that you have picked basically to spot from their home? Is that?
Yeah, I was trying to leave it up to where the actual the fire chiefs themselves are responsible for calling out their guys, leaving it up to them. And I agree. I don't think the county should be Jefferson County. Jefferson County does the same thing. They don't call out spotters through that, through their networks. It's up to the locals to do that themselves.
We are responsible. Emergency management through state statutes responsible for coordinating the storm spotting efforts. We're not.
Right.
I guess I'm. Is that process?
That's one of the things that actually was brought to my attention yesterday, and that's why I need to get with more of them, and I may have to be into the EOC down below and taking the radio traffic and then giving it to the dispatch instead of overloading the dispatch. That's about the only way that I think we can get it to them without, you know, because it could be pretty, you could be a handful for the dispatch with, you know, how many towns we have, you know, giving information about tornado weathering.
It used to be years ago, maybe not that many years ago, you had a bunch of rubberneckers, if you were out there clogging up roads, and as law enforcement emergency response were trying to get places, you had vehicles stuck on roads they shouldn't have been on.
Yep.
And they're putting themselves at risk by going out there. And that impeded the response.
That was one of the things. That was one of the things that was brought up in that storm spotter class as well. You know, you have to have awareness of your escape. Obviously, you know, you don't want to be on a dirt road like that. It's all basically common sense, and I forget what the acronym was, ACEs, and if I can't remember, it was awareness, communication, and I can't remember what all the words were, but it was iterated to them that they need to pay attention, you know, for their own safety themselves.
Enough. Yeah. Anything with law enforcement or
anything else as far as
anything
account?
Else? Or nope.
Okay. We did discuss pretty thoroughly again the Blue Springs Tower. I don't believe there's really anything new to bring here. Just another discussion on committee about it. So
and we are having another meeting again next week.
Right.
Our committee is with Tim and Klaus and Bruce. So.
And as far as law enforcement, I didn't have anything we really needed to discuss here today. Nothing to come out of committee to come here unless Gus has something that he wants to talk about.
So. Hey, we do have a time event on the clock. It's 9:15, so we'll need a motion to close, accept, reject, or award bids for industrial wheeled backhoe loader.
I'll make a motion to close the bids.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, second by Lytle to close the bids for the industrial wheeled backhoe loader. Vote 7-0. Do we have bids?
We do.
We do. So now, Terry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You need practice, John?
I do. Fold it over. Wouldn't go through.
Okay.
These are drawings.
The first bid is from NMC Incorporated Caterpillar. It's for a 2015 model 420F. With trade-in and everything figured in, the net price is $72,500 with the option bid item, which would be the warranty of $8,550. So it would bring a total, with, if you included that option, to $81,050. Next one is from Murphy Tractor and Equipment Company.
There's two bids there, Terry.
I see. I'll go with the one first. This is for a John Deere 2015 Model 310 SL HL. The net price awarded was $88,250. The option of the warranty was $5,000, which would give us a total of $93,250, which is, I should include that both of these bids included the trade-in on the 1994 Caterpillar backhoe. And the second one from Murphy is for 2015 John Deere Model 310 SK. Basically on it, net price awarded $82,250. The optional warranty of $5,000, which would bring us a total of $87,250. If I could, Myron, could I have the Murphy rep come and explain the two difference in the two that we have here.
Yeah. Morning. I'm Greg Kozuchek with Murphy Tractor, just for the record. So I bid two different machines. What the deal is John Deere, the industrial backhoe, is currently in the process of changing over to Final Tier 4. Okay, so I have brand new, which is the previous model, SK, sitting on the ground. And they're going to start shipment of the new SL, which is the next new model. That is a Final Tier 4 machine. So they're going to start shipment of that here in about 30 days. So as far as delivery, the SL would be about 60 to 90 days for delivery. The SK would be about 2 weeks. I just have to add the stabilizer guards and I believe the strobe wires to make it meet the specs. There are one of the big differences, I guess, between the SK and the SL, though. One is the final tier 4 versus the interim tier 4. Basically, you have to add an additional fluid to meet the EPA regulations on the SL. And then the hydraulic pump, they use a low center pressure compensated pump on the SL. And on the SK, they use an open center pump with the hydraulic pump liner. I did have a brand new SK at the county for the guys to operate. So you can talk to those guys. I do not have an SL that I can show you pictures. So that's why I bid both, is because your specs actually called for the pressure compensated pump. So therefore, I bid the SL along with it. So, and I did have to take an exception to add the additional fluid. So, therefore, the reason that I bid two of them.
All right.
So, any other questions? Thank you.
Myron has been customary in the past. I would like to refer those bids to the Highway Department, Galen, and have him review those, and we'll come up with a decision in 2 weeks. which direction we think we should go.
Any other questions? Eric?
You moved to take those and send them over for review?
Review those.
Second that.
You have a motion by Juergens, second by Thiemann, to refer these to Galen and the Highway Department and the Road and Bridge Committee for review, and we will make a decision at our meeting in 2 weeks. So.
I will be here. I might have to send a representative.
Okay, yeah.
I have prior obligations.
And do you want to do that as a timed event? Or not, or I don't care.
I don't know.
We can just put it on the agenda. We don't need a timed event.
I don't think we would, no.
No, because we're not accepting bids or anything.
Right.
No. We'll come back and make a recommendation in 2 weeks then.
All right. Thank you.
And a decision. Vote. 7-0. Lane 22. We have a little bit more time yet. We'll do Road and Bridge report.
Okay. Of course, we have the bids openings. We did one of them. We have the rock and gravel one coming up. We've had the grading crews are rip-wrapping the bridges, and I told the people I saw the new large backhoe in work. They're placing rock and rip-wrap around the bridge structures, and it's a nice-looking machine. Asphalt crews are crack sealing right now. Bridge crews are extending culverts on the Philly Adams Road. concerning the Philly Adams Road, Galen met with the state, and the probable closing date to finish up the around the bridge area that we have to do. There's some concrete approaches have to be poured yet, and some other things. That close date would be around April 1st. Approximately guess is weather permitting 2 weeks to finish the work. Galen reported to us that we received or will receive $142,880 approximately for STP funds and $143,041 for the bridge funds. This is money that the county gets back from the state, and in the last 2 years, we've totaled $541,681. We're having our annual board meet or township board meeting March 26th at 7:30. We had discussion on E-Energy Road. There's a couple low spots where culverts have been sagging. Gaten's going to look at that. We're looking to possible repair work, maybe rather than overlaying, maybe trying some mud jacking or something like that. We'll report back on that. It's just something we're looking at. The big thing is the Hickory Road project. We've, I should say, stalled a little bit on this. We have, we're trying to gain easements, and I didn't think it'd be quite this difficult. I mean, when we've been talking about this for 4 years now, you know, everybody along the track said, yeah, get that road through. We'll cooperate. Well, I don't know how to say it, but probably not as much cooperation as I thought there would be, okay? Anyway, so Galen's working with that, and we'll have a meeting with Mark Minnelli tomorrow at 1 o'clock in Galen's office concerning that issue, along with the drainage issue, along with the railroad issue. So those three things there that are kind of holding us up. So I'd like to get these things resolved as quickly as possible. We have figured we was going to try to get that West Mile finished this year. But if things don't go the way they are now, we probably won't get done. And then the last thing is Matt testified at a hearing in front of the legislature regarding our design-built bridges, and maybe you'd like to discuss that just a little bit.
Yeah, we're talking about this a little bit on Monday, but as I shuffle my papers here and try and find that bill so I can speak to it, this was the one we talked about where they were going to create a commission. This bill would have created a commission that we would have then submitted our bridges to, and then the commission would have decided if it was a priority for us or not. And the purpose, I think, is to deal with a lot of the crumbling infrastructure and the difficulty in getting some of the bridges replaced in Nebraska. So you know, it does take the funding, and it would tie it up within the commission. They would create what they called a the commission would have been called the Nebraska Bridge Repair Commission, and then they would have created the Nebraska Bridge Infrastructure Bank Fund, and then that's where they would have expended funds from. It would have been an 11-member commission, eight of which would have been county board members, and each one of the county board members would have been taken from an NDOR district that they have cut out in the state of Nebraska. The biggest concern was it creating a bigger bureaucracy, taking the control out of the local elected officials. And my question was, just really didn't define what a bridge was. Is it a small bridge? Is it a bridge greater than 20 feet? And as I illustrated last, around Monday, we go back and look at the, 30-some projects we had done out of our 1-in-6 plan, or 1-year plan last year. 13 of those were small bridges. And my concern was, would we have been able to get 13 bridges done if it was tied up in a bigger bureaucracy and somebody else didn't consider that a priority for us? You know, there's 93 counties with anywhere from 3 to 7 supervisors or commissioners. How in the world are they going to know what's a priority for us? And then when they, being the commission, negotiate with the contractor to put the bridge in, that's completely out of our hands. But when everything's said and done, we're responsible. All the counties are responsible. So I think it was an insightful bill. I think it was I question how it was drafted and maybe some – who would really benefit. I think it is a good bill in the fact that it addresses an issue, which is funding for bridges that need to be repaired. I would say working with Galen and Mark Minnelli over the last couple of years and the makeup of this board, we've been pretty proactive about dealing with our bridges. And you look at the type and the number and the size of the projects that we've been able to improve, repair, we've done a pretty good job. So there seemed to be some hesitancy to give us the money to let us do our job. They wanted to tie that up. But it doesn't appear as though it's going to get out of committee this year, but it probably will come back. And there appears to be some desire to really ramrod this design-build bridge structure. And there was a engineer from Hall County and also from Lancaster County that said, well, what if we want to take the bridge out and put in box culverts, or we want to do something triple or twin tubes and do something different? Well, nobody could define what that process would be. And so that's where, you know, it wasn't fully defined. It was another one of those, let's pass it and then we'll find out what's in it type things. And we've gone down that road. But, you know, I think something like this will come back at a later time. I think it's good that in the state of Nebraska we're looking at this. But there didn't appear to be any support from anybody that testified there that was involved in the county government, whether it's elected or in a supervisory or directorship role. Nobody was in support of it. It was all the people on the outside that had a financial interest that appeared to support it. And I'll just leave it at that.
You want to mention where NACO was on that?
NACO was in support of this bill.
This is our organization. It didn't seem to communicate with us and came in favor of the big contractors rather than those of us who are county boards. I thought you all ought to really know that.
It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Minnelli was there, too, so if you get an opportunity to visit and get his side, you know, of that, too. There was a couple different highway superintendents from other counties as well, and there were other supervisors and commissioners there as well. So.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Very good. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right.
That's it.
All right. I'd just like to make one comment towards the Hickory Road deal. This is a project that has been 40 years in the making. I mean, as long as I've been alive and can remember, there's been discussion on hardtop surface on the Hickory Road and the road quality and the fact that we're lucky that nobody has ever been really, really hurt on that road. At this point, I think it's you know, we're right there at the finish line. And whether it's this person, that person, whatever's holding it up, I think we all need to make our best effort in order to get this thing done. And I think it needs to become priority one on our one-year projects. I think it's something that we need to be on the phone. We need to be doing whatever we need to do to make this thing happen. It's not something we need to be putting off more years. It's already been two more years than I wanted it to be. We're already 3 years down, farther than I thought when Matt and I first started talking about it several years back. I thought we were going to have it. You know, I figured we'd be done last year already. So I know there's more things that come up. I realize, and from our discussion Monday, I realize this is serious issues that we got to deal with. But whatever we got to do, we need to get it done.
And I hear you loud and clear, and I think that's frustrating a lot of us that's been on the board for 4 years or more or whatever, that Hickory Road is priority.
Well, and to springboard off that, one of the things I think that's been a concern by some people in the public, and I know in my district, is would we do another bond to do this? And one of the things that we've been very diligent about, which I think in the back of our minds, and I know when I was the first finance chairman, I think Myron carried that on as well as with the rest of the committee, we've really tried to protect some of those funds. And we look currently, of course, the end of or the beginning of March, we had $1.98 million in road and bridge sinking fund, and inheritance has $2.7 million. So there was a significant amount of this project, 70-80% of this project, that was intended to be paid out of those funds at the risk of draining them down completely. So we're not looking at another large bond. This would have been not federal money. This was all local money. We would probably have to put a little bit into the general fund and spread that thing out for many years. Would have been basically just nothing for the taxpayer. So we're in a point now where we have dollars where we can fund a lot of this internally if we choose to do so, and really not hit the taxpayers with little or nothing with regard to their taxes. So we have this sitting there, but there's always something else that comes up. And if something happens and that money's gone, this project is dead. And that's some of the time-sensitive nature is from a financial standpoint, we've got an environment where we can get this thing done. But things change.
We will continue to work on that. We do have time event at 9:30. It's 9:33 on the clock now. I need a motion to close, accept, reject, or award bids for rock and gravel.
I make a motion to close all bids for rock and gravel.
Second.
Motion by Jurgen, second by Hill. Vote. 7-0.
Thank you. There's a better cutter. You use your cutter. Brian Davis was here. He's using one of the knives. He gets.
Okay. This is a bid from Gaina Trucking and Excavating Incorporated out of Panama, or Martel, excuse me. It's for hauling to the northern townships. Basically, the top three or northern townships, I'll just read them off briefly. We're looking at a hauling cost of $18.12 all the way to $20.94 for the northern. Well, I'll read them off quickly. Adams, Nemaha, Highland, Claytonia, Grant, Holt, and Hanover townships.
That includes material?
No.
Rocking?
I don't see it in there, I know. Total cost per ton. Well, probably does, but I don't see the...
Would that type of bid be that probably for both, Galen? $18 would be for rock and, I mean, material and trucking?
Probably just for material.
Just material?
Okay. No, it'd be rock. It'd be the material and the hauling, both, I think, Galen. But I don't see in here exactly where the material's coming from, exactly what it is. Can you see it?
No, I don't.
We can review that.
Well, this is basically a hauling bid, I believe, for the Northern Three. Well, the rest of them are blank back there, right?
Yeah.
Well, as we've done in the past, we'll refer these to Galen, too, and he can further figure that out. This is a bid from Consolidated Sand and Gravel, and this is just for... This first one is from Consolidated Sand and Gravel. It's which pit? $10 per ton. And the other one there in Jefferson County. So I assume this is the Powell pit. The Powell pit in Fairbury, Jefferson County, I assume, is $10 per ton. And the Consolidated Sand and Gravel bid also in Thayer County is $10.25 per ton. And there's also hauling costs enlisted in this one, too, for every county through on both of these. So... total cost per ton, yeah, so they must have included the hauling in there also then. This is a bid from Beatrice Concrete Company. Various rock bids anywhere from 1 inch to 2 inch crush rock or 3 to 5 inch riprap. Those bid prices, I'll give you a standard 1 3/4 inch crush rock, $14 per ton. Also on that one, there are prices contained in there for delivery cost to every township also. This is from Rock On Incorporated, crushed rock bid. Rock On delivery from Site Quarry. On this page, the delivery cost per ton range anywhere from $2.60 to $5.50 per ton. That is from the Sites Quarry, and then this other option is Rock On Incorporated, trucking only from Du Bois, and those prices range anywhere from $6.50 all the way up to $10.50 per ton for that part. Another one from Rock On, gravel bid for hauling from Consolidated Pit in Alexandria and from the Powell Pit. This is trucking only. I'll start with the Alex Pit, anywhere from $6.32 all the way up to $10.60 per ton. From the Powell Pit, located in Fairbury, South Fairbury, anywhere from $5.10 up to $9.60 per ton for hauling gravel material. This gravel bid is from Ace Sand and Gravel. And as I've noticed in the past, bid's good till end of contract or pit runs out. Pit price for gravel, $10.40 per ton. These bids are from RL Team and Construction. Wash gravel bids from Alex Pitt. These prices include the gravel. Gravel cost is $10.40 a ton. Total price, and this is where Galen have to figure this out where it's going, is anywhere from $16.50 up to $20.76. And this includes material with trucking, so. And this is the other bid from RL Team and Construction, which would be, I assume, yeah, from the Powell Pit. Pit price for the material, $10.15 per ton, and the total cost, delivered cost, is anywhere from, which includes trucking and material, $15.08, all the way up to $19.43. So, is that all of them?
I guess so.
Yeah, that's just the bond. With that being said, as we've done in the past, we'll accept all bids and refer them to Galen's office again to go through all those, and he'll come back and have everything categorized and where we got the bid prices when you add everything together, trucking with the gravel price. So.
Got a motion?
I'm sorry. Make a motion, yes.
Motion made by Jergen and seconded by Lytle to refer all bids to Galen and his office so that they can come back with a spreadsheet and show us what everything actually compared to each other. So,
we're going to accept them all now?
Yeah, we're going to accept all bids, yes.
Yeah.
Motion to accept all bids and refer them to Galen and the Highway Department. More questions? Vote. 6-4 with Teeman abstaining. Next up, I think we'll see Dave sitting here, Dave Claybaugh. And if you would like to come up here, we're going to first I'll entertain a motion to approve or disapprove this Nebraska Regional Interoperable Network Agreement.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Byers, second by Hill. Dave Claybaugh is here with NRD. And
good morning, everyone.
Go ahead.
I guess Myron asked me to come to maybe answer questions. I guess this agreement involves our new rural water tower east of Wymore. We were approached by emergency managers, guys, back in 2013. We put this on there for relay signals. Tim can probably talk better about what they plan to do. But I think they've got three discs on there. They want to relay messages back and forth for line of sight. This agreement allows them to do that. Our attorney had a few problems with the original agreement and thought Gage County should be a part of this because of the emergency management. And he wasn't quite sure of the interlocal agreement with Southeast Nebraska Emergency Management Region with the county. And I don't know if the county actually has an interlocal agreement. I doubt it, but that's why he recommended Gage County be part of this. I guess that's what I know about towers and this.
Be careful what you say. You might get put on a committee to help us.
As chairman.
Zinski's talking about our ones are going to be pointing or connected to Pickerel. One will be connected to the dispatch. And then, if I remember right, it goes east. They have a little problem with that eastern area. That's what that is. And then also, we'll have another one for Pickerel. They got to go through the city, I think, April 13th is when they're the next meeting they have. But they'll have two. And I can't remember exactly where it comes from the north, but that Pickerel.
We're on. We will call the order of the Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:47. Fight the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall there, attendance by observation. Jurgens Hill, Bauman, Darn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. The consent agenda. Approved minutes of the meeting held March 4th, 2015. The general agenda. Approve all claims through March 18, 2015 in the amount of $348,756.96. Accept claim number 150301 23 to Beatrice Lawn Care and 150302 15 to Johnny's Welding, which will be voted on separately under regular agenda. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling check number 150202 03 to Gage County Medical Clinic in the amount of $226. Approve register of deeds fee report for the month of February 2015. Need a motion to approve consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Tiemann. Vote. 7-0. Comments from the public. And I believe Lisa would like to talk about the races this weekend.
I just wanted to share with you a little bit of our racing stats over the weekend because I think it's fair for you to hear it from the Gage County Ag Society first because we're pretty excited about this last weekend's results. We had 273 cars participate for that three-day event. Out of that, nine of those were from, or excuse me, that represented nine states. And we brought in also two Providences from Canada. So the hotels were full, also in the community. We brought in about 6,500 people through the pit and through the grandstand for the weekend's events. But we are on our third year of doing a pay-per-view where people can actually buy the races. We film them right on site. So this is the statistics I want you to really hear because everybody that the comments that came back were so positive from that. 38 states viewed the races. So they bought that program over a three-day period of time. And out of those 38 states, we also represented in those stats were Mexico, Australia, Canada, Nova Scotia, and Japan. So, but more importantly, you wonder how, you know, that takes away from your ticket sales. And we've tried to research that pretty hard. And we found that over 98% of those people that purchased that were at least an hour and a half driving time away. So we feel that those people are still coming that are in Nebraska that want to come. It just gives another avenue, you know, to sell our community and to sell our racetrack and the investment that the county has made into that racetrack. So all the comments from the drivers and the public were so positive. They're very appreciative. They think we have an outstanding facility. But most importantly, they were very, very complimentary to our community and the people behind it. So but I wanted to share that with you.
That pay-per-view, was that while the races were going? That was
yes.
Live or was that
was live delayed? Streaming. Live streaming is live what streaming. We did. That's our third attempt with doing that. So our statistics keep growing with that. It's a new avenue to sell and promote. And so keep in mind that our race is one of the first races here in the northern region that have the opportunity the racers can race on dirt, and that's what they're all after. So chances are they won't be back until next spring. They may attend our fall, but they really want to race on dirt. And obviously we have to thank Mother Nature, too, because this is what it was all about. We all ended up with sunburns and so forth, but it was well worth it. So.
Well, Lisa, I'd like to compliment the Fair Board also. I mean, they do an excellent job at putting this on. It's a lot of work, I know, but they do an excellent job with it. So
we will convey that. So.
I heard big compliments about your fellows who take care of the track. Good. And what a wonderful job they have done.
Yeah. So. Yeah. If you went out on the track the first night, kind of dusty there, but that was done in purpose. A lot of those drivers like to set their suspension on their cars front and back end, and so we don't water a whole lot until they get the suspension and their brakes all worked with. And then by day two, there's enough rubber laid down that, you know, they can run pretty hard. So, but.
Thank you. It's big for the city of Beatrice and Gage County.
We agree.
What a great event.
Next up, approve or disapprove claim number 15030123 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $748.50.
I move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Byers. This is on separate because of why?
Eric's.
Separate because we have ownership of that company sitting on the board.
Good deal. Vote. 6-4 with team abstaining. Approve or disapprove claim number 15030215 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $208.76.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Tiemann. Questions? Vote. 6 in favor with Jurgens abstaining. 9:15, we've got some other things. Committee reports. Building and grounds.
Dave Jones, we've had some stuff going on, and Dave will give us a report relative to the way we met with our prospective person who's going to be doing the outside of our courthouse eventually, but we're moving forward.
Yes,
Dave?
Good morning. Thank you. I did invite Greg Dennis to come down, and he talked to the committee about the stone repair. That this is the same person that did the southeast corner earlier, and using the Jean material to repair any damaged stone. And when we had him come down, he gave a report on, took some nice pictures and stuff of what's going on with our building. The building itself is in very good shape. But over the years, it does need repointed, which is a routine maintenance item. So that was one thing he brought up. But also, years ago, they used to think it was better to waterproof limestone, and now they're saying it's better to just let it breathe. And what is happening, if you throw water on this limestone, it will just beat up and roll right off, and it should absorb into it. And what it's doing is, with the freezing, thawing cycle, it's popping off. Not on the rock face, but mainly on the smooth surface of the walls, it will pop off pieces like this. And so what he's recommending is to wash the entire courthouse with a solution that would remove that silicone-based sealer on there, and then repairing damaged stones by grinding. They have to grind it out and then replace it with that Jean material. And that Jean has been time-tested. It's been around 40 years. They've used it a lot in back east and stuff. So I think it's a real good product to use. It's a breathable product. And so mainly to correct the problems would be the washing and repairing. And like I say, otherwise, it's mainly in just certain areas. It's up higher where we're seeing the damage at. And what other counties have done, the county that... Ord is in, I can't remember what county that is. They have hired him to do it, and he just does X amount of work over time, and they've had him, I think he said, 7 years. He comes back and just, you know, tackles a portion of it.
I'll just interrupt for a minute, but you all have a book that we've given you that shows all of these things that Dave is pointing out to you as far as the mortar is concerned, what's happening and what needs to be done. Some comments after that on what we need to do.
Right.
Please forgive me for interrupting, but this is a good piece.
It's really interesting when he came down and talked about the mortar that you have to use to make sure that it's softer than the limestone, because as big as this building is, you don't really see any movement, but the blocks do move, and it chips off the edges of the block when the mortar is harder than the limestone itself. So he's recommending to you grind it out 3/4 of an inch and use a hydraulic-based limestone mortar repair on there. And like I say, that the repointing is actually more or less just a general routine maintenance. We haven't had this repointed in a long time, so.
So we'll be moving forward on a regular basis. He'll be bringing us more information and starting to get into some estimates as far as cost, and we'll continue to move forward with this.
But I believe he said he's looking at up to like 7 years or something. If he did the whole courthouse this
right.
way, it would be certain areas, certain segments, and it would do it over a period of time. We'd just as soon do it in the fall.
Right, yeah.
If
we can pick the dates, yeah. When he did the southeast part, the reason I like to see him do it in the fall time, the weather's cooler. When they use that yawn patch, you actually have to mist it. If it's really hot, you mist it while it's drying, and this way they were able to just do it without the worrying about it drying out too quick.
We could be looking at some major expenditures here. I think he kind of threw out some $500,000 to $1 million.
Right.
As far as how much it's going to cost us, but we'll get closer to that
right.
as we go along.
And we did spend $13,000 last year with him, I believe, $13,000 we did spend.
Yeah,
with
13,
him
and then we had an additional little bit of work on the south side too. But
so he did. But it one of the main issues is that water's gotten in behind there, then it's sealed and can't come out, and then we're having some issues in behind where that water's not allowed to come back out. And this product, what he's using. The water
would be able to breathe, yes.
It would be able to breathe, and the water would be able to come back out. Because basically what that sealer did was if water got behind it, it also sealed it in. It not only sealed it from the outside coming in, if it ever got in there and because of the cracks
right.
and stuff.
And it'll come off in a big
yeah.
piece. It'll be like that. And what he pointed out also, sometimes there's just a small little hole, and when you tap on it, you can tell it's hollow. So then they you know, just tap on it and it'll break off the big piece, and then that's when they have to grind it down and replace that whole section with the yawn material.
What's the coloration look like? I was trying to look on these pictures to see if there's anything.
It is. He has an exact match to this, but when he did apply it, because this stone is waterproof and the yawn is absorbing moisture, there is a color difference in it. And that's what I was really concerned about at the beginning, is if we have a lot of patches, we don't want it to look polka dotted. And he is working. There is a top coat that they can put on this to blend it in better also. But he's been really good about working with trying to get an exact match. And if I had the sample here, I didn't bring it. It is exactly the same color as this, as long as moisture doesn't change the color. And that's where this washing the building would make it all look the same also. So, yeah, if I threw water on this, it would just completely run off of this side, the inside, it would be a lot darker.
So if the whole building gets washed, that'll probably stop the damage then?
It would prevent a lot of the spalling that's going on, yes.
It will slow it down.
Except for the stuff that's already damaged.
Well, until we get the cracks back right and the patching all done.
Right.
We haven't really stopped it, yeah. Because we've had some effect of over the years of what's happened, and they've got to repair those, and then that will really stop the water
yeah.
issues that we're having and stuff. Because I think you said even somewhere in one of the courtrooms or something, there's been some water issues.
There was water, and that was a joint failure. There was actually water that came all the way through when they were repairing that. He stuck his trowel in there. And I was surprised that, you know, once water finds a path in, it went in and it actually stained just one little piece of the wainscoting in the district courtroom. So that showed that water was getting into the building. So, and, you know, I've looked before. I think it was in the 1980s was the last time they did any tuck pointing. And I don't know if it's been repointed in a long time. So I think we're due for some repair work on this
But he's going to be back, Greg is, to visit and give some cost estimates of what certain areas need. Like to start probably on the east side somewhere first.
He had recommended doing the upper level first, starting on the east and just going around. And one other thing he did bring up would be on the chimneys. There's a lot of caulking on the chimneys, which that's not good. He would grind that out and repoint all those also. It sounds bad, but when you look at the building, there's certain areas that are in bad shape, but you can go a long ways, and there's other areas where there's no damage at all. So,
yeah. The building's it's not falling apart.
No, it's just a big building, so it does take a lot of time to cover the whole thing. So.
Yeah. Okay, you want to talk blue, too?
Well, yeah, I've been working with JT. We changed out some bulbs, and we did put a lens on there. JT's been really involved with trying to get this really nice, bright, brilliant blue on it, and we did try a lens that didn't appear to be all that blue, but he's still working on it. He's building some frames right now, and we're going to try it again and see. I know they've done it on other limestone buildings, and like at the Capitol, they have a lot larger wattage of bulb that shines out. Ours are 400 watt, and it just seems like the stone absorbs so much of the color that it makes it look just kind of dark and not blue.
We're more black and blue.
But JT is he's plugging away. He's really trying hard to make this really show up blue. So
I think I got confidence in JT.
Yes.
He'll get her done.
Yes.
Just taking some work.
Yes.
We will get the water fountain fixed out here in the main hallway.
Yes. Yes.
I just want the sheriff to check out the stone weapon that he brought in today. That's kind of a...
Shank.
I like the O there, too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Equalization.
Nothing new.
Finance.
A couple of different things. One of them we had a conversation about was the copiers. Several departments, I believe five, are looking at some update. Four departments are looking at needing to upgrade the copiers. We didn't have any of that in the budget this year. Several years ago, we did a major desk and thing purchases out of inheritance fund, I think of around $80,000 or so, maybe a little bit more. So I think we were talking about getting some informal quotes. There appears to be one particular model that the group seems to like more often than not, and I guess then it's just a matter of deciding if they can wait until the budget year to put it in or if they need it sooner than later, and it sounds like they might need them sooner than later. So I would throw out for consideration using a miscellaneous general fund and not out of inheritance. We can still designate or transfer funds. Miscellaneous General has $214,000 left in it, and we specifically budget that for things that come up during the year that are just kind of unexpected. So just think about that. There's not an imminent purchase, but probably in the next month or so there might be, unless sooner. And I think Patty's office is
one. We have one office that might need it almost immediately. But
as much stuff as we try to do electronically, we still produce a lot of copies, apparently, in county government. And so some of these copiers are, Gus, how old is yours?
I think 4 years.
4 years old, and Patty's might be.
Patty's.
She bought a refurbished.
She bought a refurbished.
Trying to save money before. So
2007.
We try to get by pretty inexpensive, but we're probably at a point. And I think some of the, anywhere from around $4,500 to around $8,000 per copier. So we might be looking around $30,000. Just kind of chew on that a little bit. Something might be coming forward. But that's really it for finance. But I'd like to visit. Well, I guess we have it down here about Engage. Never mind. I'll talk about it later.
Yep.
Later. Comparing the two, Roger was asking about leasing the copiers versus purchasing, and we're trying to compare the two, what might be a better deal or not. So we have looked at that as well.
Human resource?
Nothing.
Nothing. Law enforcement?
Start out, Tim had a storm spotter meeting last night. I guess I'd like to have Tim give us an update as to how that went last night, and I guess we'll start from there.
I was going to ask to come up and speak for that. We had 40 people, actually 42 with John and me, or John and I, and it was a pretty decent turnout, I guess, compared to what I asked with John. That was kind of an average of the people at show. I don't have the exact count of like fire department and rescue, and there was a mixture of people. There was, you know, with fire and some of the, and John's dispatch was there. So there was, I would say, about 20 public was there as well as some kids. So that was kind of nice. They got to see some neat material that the National Weather Service provides. Some new video with what happened in Pilger. Some really outstanding video, pretty scary video. It's a good access for them to see how dangerous those storms can be, and actually helps them understand that, you know, you see all these videos and all these pictures of everything. If everybody is so close to them, but you got to realize how dangerous that situation you are in at that point. Just the very start of a tornado, and these people were driving right underneath that. I don't know if they were taking pictures of their moon roof or sun roof or whatever it was, but it was something else. So that's one of the big points to having that, as well as helping some of the local spotters with their fire departments, whatever, to understand what the National Weather Service is looking for reports, like from rain to hail to wind, and, you know, obviously tornadoes. Kind of gives them the pointers of what they're really looking for. As well, what John brought, he brought the rapid tag system that we have in our area that the county owns to show...
Identify who John is.
Oh, sorry, John McKee. He's the Jefferson County Emergency Manager. Brought that rapid tag system, and what we use that for... If you don't know, it's actually just a prints a color tag with your name and basically just kind of just a regular ID. It doesn't have any picture on it like that, just information on it. And each one of them, we've kind of set up a color code of responsibilities of, you know, from law to volunteers to emergency management, to press to certain areas where we can kind of get a quick ID of people and their kind of neon colors to where we can actually see them and direct them to where they go. But they got first taste of how that's actually going to work in case if there was ever a disaster, and we actually had to use that to where we had to kind of track people. One helps with record keeping. Another, it helps with, you know, getting people where they're to be and actually making sure we get everybody out of an area after the work time is over or whatever, so it can keeps track of them, so, you know, we're not missing anybody. So and it's more of a direction control, so it's kind of nice to where they see it. It's kind of slow process at the start and actually at the end, because you have to, you know, as you bring everybody in individually, you can only take everybody out individually. You can't just mass wipe, and that's one reason why it's for safety. So you don't just mass wipe everybody and you have 10, 15 people still working on site. Like in a fire, for instance, you don't want them out there by themselves, no backup type deal. So,
I don't think we want to forget it hasn't been that many years since we had a storm move right through the center of Beatrice, and it can happen anywhere. And you look at Pilger and you look at some of these other places and around the country, and we're pretty blessed, but it can happen any day.
Yeah, we had some local emergency managers from this region that went up to Pilger to help assist, and that was some good knowledge that they learned from that to help our area as well. So that's some good handy knowledge. And that's one of the things they learned with the rapid tag, and one of the things that we made steps to have more of a color-coded ID system to where it's very quick, you know, even for... Also, like for security issues as well, you know where people are to be with just that card.
I think you made a good point last night in that you can't always see it on a radar and you can't always see it with some machine, but people looking up into the sky and having the eyes that can visualize some of these things is so important in having spotters.
Yeah, there's a lot of misleading clouds that, you know, that look like funnel clouds or look like tornadoes or aren't tornadoes, and certain actions between, you know, winds that can produce from those, can be produced from those storms that can cause tornado type winds that can cause tornado type damage that aren't tornadoes. Then, you know, one of the things that Brian Smith, which was the presenter for the National Weather Service out of Omaha, he talked about those downforce type winds. And he also talked about, you know, a tornado is not classified a tornado until it actually you're seeing the dust cloud from the ground after seeing the funnel cloud. So they don't want to classify it that until then. Because then, you know, there's not really a touchdown. So, it's, you know, it goes through all kinds of other, you know, insurance type stuff with claims and. And one of the things that, you know, you hear, and he talked about with spotters, you know, you hear on the videos or whatever that the spotters are classified as an F5. Well, and he also reiterated how those are classified as the actual damage that's done on the ground. It's not by the size of the tornado. It's not. It's all damage. And each building reacts different to certain certain tornadoes, and that's how they classify them, not by the size, you know.
Just a question about our process of spotters. We're previous, Mark had just had a handful of people that would spot in place, and we had discouraged over a period of years calling out fire departments, and because they become then an agent of the county if they're out there responding, and then we become liable from an insurance standpoint. So we had stopped that. Mm-hmm. Is that practice still in place that we're not calling fire departments out there, yep, specific people that you have picked basically to spot from their home? Is that?
Yeah, I was trying to leave it up to where the fire chiefs themselves are responsible for calling out their guys, leaving it up to them. And I will. I agree. I don't think the county should be Jefferson County. Jefferson County does the same thing. They don't call out spotters through their networks. It's up to the locals to do that themselves.
We are responsible, emergency management through state statutes, responsible for coordinating the storm spotting efforts. We're not.
Right.
I guess I'm. Is that process?
That's one of the things that actually was brought to my attention yesterday, and that's why I need to get with more of them I may have to be into the EOC down below and taking the radio traffic and then giving it to the dispatch instead of overloading the dispatch. That's about the only way that I think we can get it to them without, you know, because it could be pretty, you could be a handful for the dispatch with, you know, how many towns we have, you know, giving information about tornado weathering.
There used to be years ago, maybe not that many years ago, you had a bunch of rubberneckers, if you were out there clogging up roads, and as law enforcement emergency response were trying to get places, you had vehicles stuck on roads they shouldn't have been on.
Yep.
And they're putting themselves at risk by going out there. And that impeded the response.
That was one of the things that was brought up in that storm spotter class as well. You know, you have to have awareness of your escape. Obviously, you know, you don't want to be on a dirt road like that. It's all basically common sense. And I forget what the acronym was, ACEs, and if I can't remember, it was awareness, communication, and I can't remember what all the words were. But, it was iterated to them that they need to pay attention, you know, for their own safety themselves.
Enough. Yeah. Anything with okay. Law enforcement or
anything else as
nope,
far as
anything else or nope.
Okay, we did discuss pretty thoroughly again the Blue Springs Tower. I don't believe there's really anything new to bring here. Just another discussion on committee about it. So
and we are having another meeting again next week.
Right.
Our committee is with Tim and Klaus and Bruce. So.
And as far as law enforcement, I didn't have anything we really needed to discuss here today. Nothing to come out of committee to come here unless Gus has something that he wants to talk about. So,
hey,
We do have a time event on the clock. It's 9:15, so we'll need a motion to close, accept, reject, or award bids for an industrial wheeled backhoe loader.
I'll make a motion to close the bids.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, second by Lytle to close the bids for the industrial wheeled backhoe loader. Vote 7-0. Do we have bids?
We do.
We do.
Yeah.
You need practice, John?
I do. I do. Fold it over. Wouldn't go through.
Okay.
This is, these are drawings.
The first bid is from NMC Incorporated Caterpillar. It's for a 2015 model 420F. With trade-in and everything figured in, the net price is $72,500 with the option bid item, which would be the warranty of $8,550. So it would bring a total, with, if you included that option, to $81,050. One is from Murphy Tractor and Equipment Company.
There's two bids there, Terry.
I see. I'll go with the one first. This is for a John Deere 2015 Model 310 SL HL. The net price awarded was $88,250. The option of the warranty was $5,000, which would give us a total of $93,250, which is, I should include that both of these bids included the trade-in on the 1994 Caterpillar backhoe. And the second one from Murphy is for 2015 John Deere Model 310 SK. Basically on it, net price awarded $82,250. The optional warranty of $5,000, which would bring us a total of $87,250. If I could, Myron, could I have the Murphy rep come and explain the two difference in the two that we have here.
Yeah. Morning. I'm Greg Kozuschek with Murphy Tractor, just for the record. So I bid two different machines. What the deal is John Deere, the industrial backhoe, is currently in the process of changing over to final tier 4. Okay, so I have brand new, which is the previous model, SK, sitting on the ground. And they're going to start shipment of the new SL, which is the next new model. That is a final tier 4 machine. So they're going to start shipment of that here in about 30 days. So as far as delivery, the SL would be about 60 to 90 days for delivery. The SK would be about 2 weeks. I just have to add the stabilizer guards and I believe the strobe wires to make it meet the specs. There are one of the big differences, I guess, between the SK and the SL, though. One is the final tier 4 versus the interim tier 4. Basically, you have to add an additional fluid to meet the EPA regulations on the SL. And then the hydraulic pump, they use a low center pressure compensated pump on the SL. And on the SK, they use an open center pump with the hydraulic pump liner. I did have a brand new SK at the county for the guys to operate. So you can talk to those guys. I do not have an SL that I can show you pictures. but so that's why I bid both, is because your specs actually called for the pressure compensated pump. So therefore, I bid the SL along with it. So, and I did have to take an exception to add the additional fluid. So, therefore, the reason that I bid two of them.
All right.
So, any other questions? Thank you.
Myron has been customary in the past. I would like to refer those bids to the Highway Department, Galen, and have him review those, and we'll come up with a decision in 2 weeks. Which direction we think we should go.
Any second. Other questions? Eric?
You moved to take those and send them over for review?
Review those.
Second that.
Okay, I have a motion by Jurgens, second by Thiemann, to refer these to Galen and the Highway Department and the Road and Bridge Committee for review, and we will make a decision at our meeting in 2 weeks.
I will not be here. I might have to send a representative.
Okay, yeah.
I have prior obligations.
And do you want to do that as a timed event or not? Or I don't care.
I don't know.
We can just put it on the agenda. We don't need a timed event.
I don't think we would, no.
No, because we're not accepting bids or anything.
Right.
No. We'll come back and make a recommendation in 2 weeks then.
All right. Thank you.
And a decision. Vote. 7-0. 922. We have a little bit more time yet. We'll do Road and Bridge report.
Okay. Of course, we have the bids openings. We did one of them. We have the rock and gravel one coming up. We've had the grading crews are rip-wrapping the bridges, and I told the people I saw the new large backhoe in work. They're placing rock and rip-wrap around the bridge structures, and it's a nice-looking machine. Asphalt crews are crack sealing right now. Bridge crews are extending culverts on the Philly-Adams Road. concerning the Philly-Adams Road, Galen met with the state, and the probable closing date to finish up the around the bridge area that we have to do, there's some concrete approaches have to be poured yet, and some other things. That close date would be around April 1st. Approximately guess is, weather permitting, 2 weeks to finish the work. Galen reported to us that we received or will receive $142,880 approximately for STP funds and $143,041 for the bridge funds. This is money that the county gets back from the state, and in the last 2 years, we've totaled $541,681. We're having our annual board meeting, or township board meeting, March 26th at 7:30. We had discussion on E-Energy Road. There's a couple low spots where culverts have been sagging. Galen's going to look at that. We're looking to possible repair work, maybe rather than overlaying, maybe trying some mud jacking or something like that. We'll report back on that. It's just something we're looking at. The big thing is the Hickory Road project. We've, I should say, stalled a little bit on this. We have, we're trying to gain easements, and I didn't think it'd be quite this difficult. I mean, when we've been talking about this for 4 years now, you know, everybody along the track said, yeah, get that road through. We'll cooperate. Well, I don't know how to say it, but probably not as much cooperation as I thought there would be, okay? Anyway, so Galen's working with that, and we'll have a meeting with Mark Minnelli tomorrow at 1 o'clock in Galen's office concerning that issue, along with the drainage issue, along with the railroad issue. So those three things there that are kind of holding us up. So I'd like to get these things resolved as quickly as possible. We have figured we was going to try to get that West Mile finished this year. But if things don't go the way they are now, we probably won't get to see it get done. And then the last thing is Matt testified at a hearing in front of the legislature regarding our design-built bridges, and maybe you'd like to discuss that just a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about this a little bit on Monday, but as I shuffle my papers here and try and find that bill so I can speak to it, this was the one we talked about where they were going to create a commission. This bill would have created a commission that we would have then submitted our bridges to, and then the commission would have decided if it was a priority for us or not. And the purpose, I think, is to deal with a lot of the crumbling infrastructure and the difficulty in getting some of the bridges replaced in Nebraska. So it does take the funding, and it would tie it up within the commission. They would create what they called the commission would have been called the Nebraska Bridge Repair Commission, and then they would have created the Nebraska Bridge Infrastructure Bank Fund, and then that's where they would have expended funds from. It would have been an 11-member commission, 8 of which would have been county board members, and each one of the county board members would have been taken from an NDOR district that they have cut out in the state of Nebraska. The biggest concern was it creating a bigger bureaucracy, taking the control out of the local elected officials. And my question was, just really didn't define what a bridge was. Is it a small bridge? Is it a bridge greater than 20 feet? And as I illustrated on Monday, we go back and look at the, 30-some projects we had done out of our 1-in-6 plan, or 1-year plan last year. 13 of those were small bridges. And my concern was, would we have been able to get 13 bridges done if it was tied up in a bigger bureaucracy and somebody else didn't consider that a priority for us? You know, there's 93 counties with anywhere from 3 to 7 supervisors or commissioners. How in the world are they going to know what's a priority for us? And then when they, being the commission, negotiate with the contractor to put the bridge in, that's completely out of our hands. But when everything's said and done, we're responsible. All the counties are responsible. So I think it was an insightful bill. I think it was I question how it was drafted and maybe some who would really benefit. I think it is a good bill in the fact that it addresses an issue, which is funding for bridges that need to be repaired. I would say working with Galen and Mark Manelli over the last couple of years and the makeup of this board, we've been pretty proactive about dealing with our bridges. And you look at the type and the number and the size of the projects that we've been able to improve, repair, we've done a pretty good job. So there seemed to be some hesitancy to give us the money to let us do our job. They wanted to tie that up. But it doesn't appear as though it's going to get out of committee this year, but it probably will come back. And there appears to be some desire to really ramrod this design-build bridge structure. And there was a engineer from Hall County and also from Lancaster County that said, well, what if we want to take the bridge out and put in box culverts, or we want to do something triple or twin tubes and do something different? Well, nobody could define what that process would be. And so that's where, you know, it wasn't fully defined. It was another one of those, let's pass it and then we'll find out what's in it type things. And we've gone down that road. But, I think something like this will come back at a later time. I think it's good that in the state of Nebraska we're looking at this. But there didn't appear to be any support from anybody that testified there that was involved in the county government, whether it's elected or in a supervisory or directorship role. Nobody was in support of it. It was all the people on the outside that had a financial interest that appeared to support it. And I'll just leave it at that.
You want to mention where NACO was on that?
NACO was in support of this bill.
This is our organization. Didn't seem to communicate with us, and came in favor of the big contractors rather than those of us who are county boards. I thought you all ought to really know that.
It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Manelli was there, too, so if you get an opportunity to visit and get his side, you know, of that, too. There was a couple of different highway superintendents from other counties as well, and there were other supervisors and commissioners there as well. So.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Very good. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right.
That's it.
All right. I'd just like to make one comment towards the Hickory Road deal. This is a project that has been 40 years in the making. I mean, as long as I've been alive and can remember, there's been discussion on hardtop surface on the Hickory Road and the road quality and the fact that we're lucky that nobody has ever been really, really hurt on that road. At this point, I think it's we're right there at the finish line. And whether it's this person, that person, whatever's holding it up, I think we all need to make our best effort in order to get this thing done. And I think it needs to become priority one on our one-year projects. I think it's something that we need to be on the phone. We need to be doing whatever we need to do to make this thing happen. It's not something we need to be putting off more years. It's already been two more years than I wanted it to be. We're already 3 years down, farther than I thought when Matt and I first started talking about it several years back. I thought we were going to have it. I figured we'd be done last year already. So I know there's more things that come up. I realize, and from our discussion Monday, I realize this is serious issues that we got to deal with. But whatever we got to do, we need to get it done.
And I hear you loud and clear, and I think that's frustrating a lot of us that's been on the board for 4 years or more or whatever, that Hickory Road is priority.
Well, and to springboard off that, one of the things I think that's been a concern by some people in the public, and I know in my district, is would we do another bond to do this? And one of the things that we've been very diligent about, which I think in the back of our minds, and I know when I was the first finance chairman, I think Myron carried that on as well as with the rest of the committee, we've really tried to protect some of those funds. And we look currently, of course, the end of or the beginning of March, we had $1.98 million in road and bridge sinking fund, and inheritance has $2.7 million. So there was a significant amount of this project, 70-80% of this project, that was intended to be paid out of those funds at the risk of draining them down completely. So we're not looking at another large bond. This would have been not federal money. This was all local money. We would probably have to put a little bit into the general fund and spread that thing out for many years. Would have been basically just nothing for the taxpayer. So we're in a point now where we have dollars where we can fund a lot of this internally if we choose to do so, and really not hit the taxpayers with little or nothing with regard to their taxes. So we have this sitting there, but there's always something else that comes up. And if something happens and that money's gone, this project is dead. And that's some of the time-sensitive nature is from a financial standpoint, we've got an environment where we can get this thing done. But things change.
We will continue to work on that. We do have time event at 9:30. It's 9:33 on the clock now. I need a motion to close, accept, reject, or award bids for rock and gravel.
I make a motion to close all bids for rock and gravel.
Second.
Motion by Juergen, second by Hill. Vote. 7-0.
Thank you. Here's a better cutter. You use your cutter. Brian Davis was here. He could do all the knives. It gets.
Okay. This is a bid from Gaina Trucking and Excavating Incorporated out of Panama, or Martel, excuse me. It's for hauling to the northern townships. Basically, the top three or northern townships. I'll just read them off briefly. We're looking at a hauling cost of $18.12 all the way to $20.94 for the northern. Well, I'll read them off quickly. Adams, Nemaha, Highland, Claytonia, Grant, Holt, and Hanover townships.
That includes material?
No.
Rocking?
I don't see it in there, I know. Total cost per ton. Well, probably does, but I don't see the...
Would that type of bid be that probably for both, Galen? $18 would be for rock and... I mean, material and trucking?
Just material.
Okay.
No, it'd be rock. It'd be the material and the hauling, both, I think, Galen. But I don't see in here exactly where the material's coming from, exactly what it is. Can you see it?
No. I don't. We can review that.
Well, this is basically a hauling bid, I believe, for the Northern Three. The rest of them are blank back there, right?
Yeah.
Well, as we've done in the past, we'll refer these to Galen, too, and he can further figure that out. This is a bid from Consolidated Sand and Gravel, and this is just for this first one is from... Consolidated Sand and Gravel, it's, which pit? $10 per ton. And the other one, in Jefferson County, so I assume this is the Powell pit. The Powell pit in Fairbury, Jefferson County, I assume, is $10 per ton. And the Consolidated Sand and Gravel bid also in Thayer County is $10.25 per ton. And there's also hauling costs enlisted in this one, too, for every county through on both of these. So... total cost per ton, yeah, so they must have included the hauling in there also then. This is a bid from Beatrice Concrete Company. Various rock bids anywhere from 1 inch to 2 inch crush rock or 3 to 5 inch riprap. Those bid prices, I'll give you a standard 1 3/4 inch crush rock, $14 per ton. Also on that one, there are prices contained in there for delivery cost to every township also. This is from Rock On Incorporated, crushed rock bid. Rock On delivery from Sites Quarry. On this page, the delivery cost per ton range anywhere from $2.60 to $5.50 per ton. That is from the Sites Quarry, and then this other option is Rock On Incorporated, trucking only from Du Bois. And those prices range anywhere from $6.50 all the way up to $10.50 per ton for that part. Another one from Rock On, gravel bid for hauling. from Consolidated Pit in Alexandria and from the Powell Pit. This is trucking only. I'll start with the Alex Pit. Anywhere from $6.32 all the way up to $10.60 per ton. From the Powell Pit, located in Fairbury, South Fairbury, anywhere from $5.10 up to $9.60 per ton for hauling gravel material. This gravel bid is from Ace Sand and Gravel. And as I've noticed in the past, bid's good till end of contract or pit runs out. Pit price for gravel, $10.40 per ton. These bids are from RL Team and Construction. Wash gravel bids from Alex Pitt. These prices include the gravel. Gravel cost is $10.40 a ton. Total price, and this is where Galen have to figure this out where it's going, is anywhere from $16.50 up to $20.76, and this includes material with trucking. So and this is the other bid from RL Team and Construction, which would be, I assume, yeah, from the Powell Pit. Pit price for the material, $10.15 per ton, and the total cost, delivered cost, is anywhere from, which includes trucking and material, $15.08 all the way up to $19.43. So, is that all of them?
I guess so.
Yeah, that's just the bond. With that being said, as we've done in the past, we'll accept all bids and refer them to Galen's office again to go through all those, and he'll come back and have everything categorized and where we got the bid prices when you add everything together, trucking with the gravel price. So.
Got a motion?
I'm sorry. Make a motion, yes.
Make a motion to that. Motion made by Jergen, seconded by Lytle, to refer all bids to Galen and his office so that they can come back with a spreadsheet and show us what everything actually compared to each other. So,
going to accept them all now?
Yeah, we're going to accept all bids, yes.
Yes.
Motion to accept all bids and refer them to Galen and the Highway Department. More questions? Vote. 6-4 with Tiemann abstaining. Next up, I think we'll see Dave sitting here, Dave Claybaugh. And if you would like to come up here, we're going to first I'll entertain a motion to approve or disapprove this Nebraska Regional Interoperable Network Agreement.
So move. Second.
Motion by Byers, second by Hill. Dave Claybaugh is here with NRD. And
good morning, everyone.
Go ahead.
I guess Myron asked me to come to maybe answer questions. I guess this agreement involves our new rural water tower east of Wymore. We were approached by emergency managers, guys, back in 2013. You put this on there for relay signals. Tim can probably talk better about what they plan to do. But if they've got three discs on there, they want to relay messages back and forth for line of sight. This agreement allows them to do that. Our attorney had a few problems with the original agreement and thought Gage County should be a part of this because of the emergency management, and he wasn't quite sure of the interlocal agreement with Southeast Nebraska Emergency Management Region with the county, and I don't know if the county actually has an interlocal agreement. I doubt it, but that's why he recommended Gage County be part of this. I guess that's what I know about towers and this.
Be careful what you say. You might get put on a committee to help us.
As chairman.
This, he's talking about our ones are going to be pointing or connected to Pickerel. One will be connected to the dispatch. And then, if I remember right, it goes east. They have a little problem with that eastern area. That's what that is. And then also, we'll have another one for Pickerel. They got to go through the city, I think, April 13th is when they're the next meeting they have. But they'll have two. I can't remember exactly where it comes from the north, but that Pickerel